Before we begin, I know Pesachim bechved achsanya. So, everything's about Hashgacha Pratis. Why you has a close connection to my family in a way. My father should be well. And we grew up in the Bronx. In the early 50s, the Rebbe directed my father to teach Chassidus in YU, to start a Shir Tanya in YU. And he said a Shir in Chassidus. One of his Talmidim was Rabbi Ben Zion Metzger. I had a brother, Oliver Shalom, younger, who was very sick. He was totally paralyzed, like all the organs in his except for his brain. And in those years, there was no institutions that were for handicapped children. So it was very difficult to find a place for him to learn. But when he finished high school, he managed to finish high school. So he wanted to learn, go further. So he couldn't find the yeshiva that would take him. The only place that was willing to take him in was YU. He went to YU and he graduated. In fact, when he graduated, by that, the graduation, Governor Cuomo was there. Going back quite a few years. And it made the front page of one of the New York papers, a picture of Cuomo congratulating when he graduated. But the main thing was that when he learned there, it was very difficult, you know, someone had to take care of him. And the Bochrim who were here used to take care of him with such ahava that it was unbelievable, you know, to take him from classroom to classroom. And later on, my parents moved to Eretz Yisrael, and they took my brother along, and he learned also to find the place where he could learn in Eretz Yisrael was very difficult. At the end was, he went to learn in the Gruz Kel in Yerushalayim. Until he was Nifter in Eretz Yisrael. His Yortzeit is right after Pesach, so it's also Hashgacha Pratis. I was asked to talk about the uniqueness of Tanya and what it has to offer. So before I begin, I just want to make just a simple observation, which is obvious, that when Chassidus Chabad was founded by the Alter Rebbe, so all his Chassidim, there were no born Chassidim in those days. All the Chassidim were people who learned Tanya, and obviously the Tanya offered something to them, and it drew them to the Alter Rebbe and to his teachings. So obviously that Tanya had something to offer people, and in those days we're talking about people who were attracted to Chassidus, the Alter Rebbe, his Talmidim. Like it's told that when the Alter Rebbe had Chadorim, but not a cheder, like nowadays we call a cheder for small children. The Chadorim of the Alter Rebbe were for great Ge'enim, who were Boki in Shas and Poskim, and not only in Shas and Poskim, but they were Boki in all kinds of Sforim of Machsheves Yisrael. And there were different levels. So we're talking about great Talmidim, and they were, and so obviously they found that the Alter Rebbe's teaching had something to attract them. So I want to begin with a story from one of the great Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe, who once described what he felt was like before he learned Chassidus and after he learned Chassidus. He said before he learned Chassidus, he felt he was like a portrait. And he said in Yiddish, Heint wie Nechten. a portrait can be a beautiful portrait, but it has no life to it. So it's yesterday. So every day is the same. Something which is alive, chayis, you can't have the same degree of chayis constantly. It always has ups and downs. A portrait is beautiful, but it's never changing. Because it has no chayis, so it's never changing. So, possibly, this is a perfect description maybe, of Yiddishkeit that might be lacking. Nowadays, when we look at Yidden, even very frumi Yidden, so they can be picture-perfect Yidden. And Baruch Hashem, nowadays, there's no lack of limud ha-teda. People learn a lot of teda, and kiyum ha-mitzvahs. Even nowadays, we have an ability to be mahadab b'mitzvahs in ways that maybe in a previous generation they didn't have the opportunity even. Nowadays, if you want to buy the best pair of tefillin, no problem. It's only a question of a couple of dollars, which nowadays is not. Nowadays, someone wants the nicest pair of tefillin, so it has no problem. You just go to a sefer and you order the best pair of tefillin you can get. And the same with all mitzvahs. Nowadays, people are mahatav and mitzvahs, and possibly even on a greater level than in previous generations. We have a picture-perfect Eden. The portrait is beautiful. But what's missing? What's missing is the chayis. And what exactly we mean, we're missing the chayis? Chayis doesn't only mean the enthusiasm. That's not the issue here, really. The pasuk says, "V'tzadik be'emunose yichye." The Gemara says, "Bo chavakuk v'hemidon nalachas." Emuna. When we say "v'emunose yichye," in other words, emuna we understand is the foundation of teiru mitzvahs. The basis and the foundation of teiru mitzvahs is emuna. Like there are many Rishayim who say that we cannot include emunah in the Taryag mitzvahs, because when we say a word a mitzvah is a command. So when we say the word in a command, that automatically there's a prior premise that there's a commander. So if we don't have emunah, so emunah can't be a mitzvah, because before we can say the word mitzvah, you have to have emunah. Without emunah, there's no mitzvahs. The concept of mitzvahs begins only after we have emunah. So that's why there's some Rishenim who say that emunah cannot be counted in the mitzvahs. And then that's why there's a whole explanation in Sforim that when we do those who do say emunah is a mitzvah, it's not because it's just emunah that there's an Eibishter. The emunah means about what is the Eibishter. Just that there is an Eibishter, that cannot be counted as a mitzvah. This is a separate discussion. I just want to bring out the point that emunah, besides being a yisod, besides being the foundation of teiru mitzvahs, because without emunah in the Eibishter, there's no teiru mitzvahs, it's also, Chabad tells us, it's also yichye. This is the chayis of teiru mitzvahs. Sometimes you hear people lamenting about the state of Yiddishkeit nowadays, that there's a lack, that there's a big lack in this area, that everyone knows a lot, but there's a lack in emunah, and that's why there are many who say that we have to find ways to instill in our meizdes chinuch ways of instilling emunah into the minds and hearts of our children and our students. The question is, though, how do you instill how do you generate emunah? How do you do that? So first, I think it's important to we'll discuss exactly what is Yiddish emunah. Emuna, like it says in Tanya, is something, Emuna, belief or not, the word Emuna is not, it's obviously a certain, it's a hakora, a certain yediya, I know, but it's not one that's based on logic. It's not that we have logical evidence or logical proof that there's an Eibishter, and that's why I believe in the Eibishter. That's not emunah. Like Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, emunah is lemaylu min hadas. Emunah is something which transcends our logic. It's not based on logic. And that's why we find that emunah is something that's not limited to big philosophers. The Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that every single Yidden are called Maminim B'nei Maminim. It's something which is found by every single Yid. Even simple Yidden, even children, people who are not shaykh to understand and to proofs, logical proofs, that is a Beda Elam. It's something because it's something which transcends Seichel. It's above Seichel. On the other hand, it doesn't mean that it's a shaky belief. Seemingly, something that I understand. It's on the contrary, if I ask, where is there more certainty? In emuna or in seichel? Something which is logical or in emuna? So where is there more certainty? The answer is in emuna, because something which is based on logic, proof, scientific evidence. So today, a scientist will tell you this is the truth, and then a decade later comes new scientific understanding, and all of a sudden they dispute all what we understood before. All of a sudden is wrong. Something which is based on seichel has no real certainty to it. It's shaky. Emun is something which is cannot be shaken. And one of the illustrations for that is, that's why you find that by a yid, his emunah brings him to a readiness to be meisin nefesh al kiddush Hashem. Person's ready to give up his life. So if there would be one shaky doubt, person wouldn't be ready to give up his life for it. So obviously the emunah has such a strength to it, that it's such a so strong and true by him, that by yid this can bring it to mesidas nefesh b'peil mamish. So what generates this emunah with this mesidas nefesh? So this is what the Alter Rebbe tells us in Tanya, that this is based on the simple thing that Panimius HaTeda tells us, Tedus HaSod, this is what in Kabbalah tells us about, that every Yid has a neshama, and what is the essence of this neshama? So like the Alter Rebbe writes, quotes right in the beginning of Tanya, is a chelik alakami mal mamish, which this is a quote from Sifri Kabbalah, because the fact that we have a neshama is obvious. That's all the Sorin speak about it. But the question is, what is the essence of this neshama? So generally, in Sforim of Chekri Yisroel, when they speak about the nefesh of a yid, what is the nefesh of a yid? It's the keich of seichel. It's connected to his seichel. But then, it's not clear what makes a yid so different than lahavdul not yidin. Every human being has a nefesh of seichel. And that's why the Alter Rebbe brings from Kabbalah that the nefesh hashenis be Yisroel, hichelik akami mal mamash. What makes the nefesh of a yid, the neshama of a yid unique, is that it's a chelik akami mal mamash. So now if we ask ourselves, how does a neshama know there's an Eibishter? How does a neshama know there's an elika? So it's a foolish question. The neshama doesn't have to search outside of itself. since this is its essence, a chelik of a leka, so a chelik of leka doesn't need any proofs that there's an leka, because that's what its essence is. So a neshama inherently has a hakkara in the Eibishter. And this is also why every single Yidden, all Yidden have emunah. Yisrael are maminim b'nei maminim, because every single Yid has the neshama. So the neshama radiates emunah into every single Yid. And if we're looking for science, scientific evidence to this fact, so that's why the Alter Rebbe brings on Tanya, that we see over the generations who is Meisen Nefesh for the Eibishter. We find that throughout the generations there were people who were simple people. Not only simple people, there were people who were even Peshe Yisroel, who were willing to give up their lives on Kiddush Hashem for their Emunah. And so the question is, from where did they? Why in the world would they be Meisen Nefesh? If you have a person who becomes an idealistic person, until he becomes very fanatic about this idea, he becomes so fanatical that he without it he gives up his life. He'll blow himself up if he doesn't have it. That's only if the person's fanatic for the subject. But if we're talking about someone who is a Peshe Yisroel, so if he asks, what did Yiddishkeit, what did the Eibishter mean to this person's life? Absolutely zero. So out of the blue, all of a sudden, he's ready to allow himself to be killed for Emunah, not to give up his religion. Religion didn't mean anything for this person, his whole life. He lived a life just the opposite of Yiddishkeit. So where did he get this from? So, and this was something which we saw throughout the generations, that there were such instances. So this is the evidence that a Yidden have an neshama, which drives them to Mesidus Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. If we look around and we see people who don't seem to have emunah, so the answer is simple, because like the Alter Rebbe says, we have a nefesh ha'olikis, but we also have a nefesh habamis. And the Alter Rebbe says a nefesh habamis comes from klipa. We call it klipa. What is klipa? The translation of the word klipa. Klipa means a shell. So there's a thick shell around our nefesh ha'olikis. So it doesn't allow the emunah of the neshama to radiate into us. We are human beings with human faculties, and our human faculties don't absorb the emunah of the neshama, the ruchnis of the neshama, because it's concealed with this klipa. So therefore, there can be a yid who doesn't feel his emunah. He doesn't even know he has emunah. But the question is now, coming back to the question, if we ask ourselves, if we want to instill emunah into someone, what do we have to do? The answer is, we don't have to. You don't learn the key to instilling emunah into a yid is not opening up svarim, which will discuss bringing logical proofs that we must say that there's a beta on the world. You look at the world and how did the world come from? So you say, we'll try to prove to you that there has to be a beta who brought the world into existence. That's not the key to instilling emunah into a yid is bringing out his neshama. Simple. One of two things. Either we have to find a tool that can draw out his neshama until it overpowers the klipa, or there's another tactic, which is, in other words, if the premise is that every yid has emunah, the question is how to bring out the emunah to over. So either we have there's something that can draw out this neshama very strongly, or we have to crush the klipa, break the nut, the shell that's surrounding it. The second way is illustrated also in Tanya at the end of Peter Koftes, without ever brings down the story that happened after the Chet HaMeraglim, where the Meraglim came back and Yidden were afraid to go into Eretz Yisrael. They were afraid. So they didn't have their emunah that the Eibishter will be able to lead them into Eretz Yisrael against all the nations that were there. They were afraid. So they were lacking the ability to be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Immediately after the Eibishter said and told them that because of that they're going to be in the Midbar, so then all of a sudden the Yidden said, we want to go. And they went against the Eibishter's command, they went. But the question is, what happened all of a sudden? They're going. Where all of a sudden did they get their emunah from? Now they're not afraid anymore. What happened? So the Alter Rebbe said the answer is because the essence of our nefesh habamis, of this klipa, is arrogance. And if we crush the arrogance of a person, this is crushing the klipa. This is based on a Zohar. The Zohar says that a person, a goof, that the fire of your neshama doesn't penetrate the goof. What should one do? So the Zohar says, if you have a log and you want to make a fire, and the fire, and a thick log, you try to put on a fire, a candle next to a big log, no fire is happening. So what do you have to do? You have to crush the log into small pieces, and then you can kindle the bonfire. So the Zohar says, the same way, a goof, that the fire of the neshama doesn't penetrate the goof, mevachonly, you have to crush the goof. But so the Alter Rebbe in Tanya says, crushing the goof doesn't mean you have to fasting in, but it means a lev nishbe v'nitke, just crushing the arrogance, and a person should be humble with a lev nishbe v'nitke. That's what breaks the klipa of the goof, and this is what happened after the Chet HaMeraglim, after Moshe Rabbeinu told them what the Eibishter said, that b'midbar hazeh yiplu pigrecha, that in this midbar you're going to die in the midbar because of your chet. So this crushed their arrogance. These harsh words of Hashem, it crushed the arrogance. So automatically then the emunah came out. So this is how the second way how the emunah can come out, either by drawing out the neshama or crushing the klipa. Now that we came to this concept that emunah means that our nefesh holy kiss radiates into us, now we can understand a little bit also what it means when we say that emunah is the highest of Torah mitzvahs. But I just want to go on the side for a few seconds and discuss a little bit what does it mean highest. Because usually when we tell people we have to have chayis in something, so we picture enthusiasm like someone jumping and singing and dancing. That's how we picture the word chayis. But the truth is, true chayis means something else. In Hasidus there's an expression that a regish, when you feel something, feeling something, that's a sign that is outside of the essence. In the essence itself, there's no regish. Like, you don't feel when you feel something, that what you feel is outside of you. You don't feel yourself, because that's you yourself. When do you feel your... there's an expression of Chassidus, you don't feel your chayim, because you are your chayim. When there's a lack of chayim, when chas v'shalom there's a chayli, then all of a sudden that's when you start feeling your chayim, when it's taken away from you. But when you have it, because that's you yourself. Again, I'd be sidetracking a little bit, but it's an interesting There's an interesting discussion in Chassidus. There's a kuntres by the Rebbe Rashab, which is called Kuntres HaAveda. In Kuntres HaAveda, in the second chapter of Kuntres HaAveda, so the Rebbe Rashab discusses things a little bit musadik. He speaks about how we have to be careful in what we see with our eyes, what we hear. There's a specific discussion about things that we're not allowed, we shouldn't be looking at. Histaklus, looking at things which are awesome. Because this brings, like speaks about many svarim, it draws the ra into the person. And the Rebbe Rashab discusses that there's some people who claim that even though they looked at something they weren't allowed to look at, it didn't cause them no hispilus. Seemingly, they went by and they were untouched by it. It didn't. They were totally unaffected by it. It didn't seem to create any hispilus in their nefesh from it. So seemingly, it was harmless. So the Rebbe Rashab says over there like this. He says, on the contrary, if it didn't cause any hispilus, that's a proof that it's worse. That it's so saturated, the ra is so saturated in you that this is who you are, so you don't feel a hispilus from it. You don't become nisragish from it. So, when we were in yeshiva, and our mashpim taught us this concept, they taught it with a moshel. The moshel is that there was once a yeshiva in the shtetl. And you know, in the shtetl in yeshiva, there was the poverty was tremendous. So the bochum, what did they have to eat? You know, so one time a big rich person came to visit the yeshiva, and he saw the state of what they were eating. He decided bochum who learned, they deserved the best, so he's going to give them a feast. So he brought them gebrotten endik, you know, roasted turkeys, and he put it out in front of the bochrim, and the bochrim never saw this in their lives. The eyes popped out and they started grabbing it, you know, and it wasn't so balabatis like you say. They grabbed it, you know, with the hands, and this big rich person stood on the side. He says, "You should be ashamed of yourself. Bochum will learn tater. This, you should come watch the way when we rich people have a feast. How we eat, you know. Everything's so perfect, you know. How did you lose yourself so much for food? So there was a smart person sitting there, and seemingly he's right." So there was a smart person said, "It's just the opposite." He said, "The bochrim never saw this. They saw this. It's a fremde zach. It's something which is new to them and strange to them. So they became very misbol from it. The rich people, it's without a hispilus. Why do they eat without a hispilus? Because this is who they are. This is their essence. So it's without a hispilus because this is who they are. And what's the proof?" He says, "Very simple. Let's take it away. Take it away from the bochrim. What will happen? Goodness, didn't have it yesterday. Don't have it tomorrow. Try to take it away from the rich people, the chickens. Watch what will happen. So you'll see who's more into it. So this is just the marshal that was given. That when we talk about chayis is not jumping with his spilus. That's not true chayis. True chayis means this is who you are. So when we speak about having chayis and teiru mitzvahs, what does it mean that we have chayis and teiru mitzvahs? Chayis and teiru mitzvahs means that when teiru mitzvahs is not something added on to us, this is our essence, who we are. And how does that happen? When your neshama starts radiating into your mitzvahs. So since your neshama is a chelik l'kami mal. So for neshama, teiru mitzvahs is not something a dover zar. This is what it is, connecting to Hashem. This is what its essence is. So that's what it means that we have chayis and teiru mitzvahs. Chayis and teiru mitzvahs is not measured by how much we dance and patch with our hands. It's measured by how much is this become so much part of us that we cannot take it away from you. You can't take it away from me. Nothing in the world will allow us to take it away from me. That's the ultimate test if it's shul chayis. And that only comes, this comes from the neshama. This is a neshama in you. This doesn't happen from learning a lot with your seichel. It comes from your neshama, tapping into your neshama. So now the question is, how do we tap into the neshama? So the answer, it says in the Zayir HaKodesh, it says like this. In the Zayir it says that there are three things which connect to each other. Yisrael Eireise V'Kutshi Baruch Yidin Teiro and HaKodesh Baruch Hu V'Chulhu Sosim V'Galya. And each one of these three, there's Sosim, there's the hidden, and there's the revealed. Teiro, there's Sosim of Teiro, the hidden part, aspects of Teiro, and there's the revealed parts of, there's Nigel of Teiro, Shasim Poskim, and then there's Nister of Teiro. In Zehar, in Parshas Bahaleischa, it says that there's Gufa Deiraisa and Yishmosa Deiraisa. The Teir, just like in a person, there's a Gufa and a Neshama, so Teir also has a Gufa and a Neshama. Nigla of Teir is called the Gufa of Teir. Nista of Teir is called the Neshama of Teir. So Teir connects Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the goof of Teira connects the goof of the Yid HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The neshama of Teira has this gula to bring out the neshama of a Yid. So this is the answer. If we ask, how do we bring out our neshamas, which translates into strengthening our emunah and making Teira mitzvahs our chayis? So the answer is to limud of nishmosa deiraisa, learning the neshama of Teira. This is the key. So if we ask ourselves, how do we bring emunah into students? The answer is that we establish in every yeshiva a shir of chasidus. That's the answer. We learn nishmosa deiraisa with children, which is interesting. We're in the month of Nisan, which is also on the second day of Nisan, is the yortzeit of the Rebbe Rashab, who established the yeshiva of Teimchik Tmim in Russia. What was unique about this yeshiva was that he set up the seder of the yeshiva, that he instituted that the bochrim should learn a few hours a day of chassidus, which was unheard of. But he wrote in letters in those days that there are plenty of yeshivas where there's a lot of teda, but what's lacking is emunah and yiddish shamayim. He wants to establish a yeshiva which will produce yidden who are imbued with emunah and yiddish shamayim. And so to this end, he instituted in the yeshiva that there should be the limud of chassidus, not just on a few minutes a day, 15 minutes a day, but it was instituted a serious learning, a good few hours a day. I mean, the day is quite large. In a 24-hour period, we can still learn 18 hours of Shas and Poskim and still have a couple of hours of Chassidus. So this is the key of how we instill emunah into a yid. Like I said before, this is so vital because this is the whole chayis of our teiru mitzvahs. This is the yisod and the chayis of teiru mitzvahs. And like everyone knows, that this is what's sorely lacking nowadays. in a very tangible way. And I want to go on to another point. And this is that, like I said before, that the Zeh HaKodesh says that in Yisrael, in Eireis and Kuchibrichu, Kul Sosen V'Galyim. So in the Neshama itself, there's a Sosen and a Galyim. And in what Sosen and Galyim means, if we to translate it into simple English, there's the conscious and there's the subconscious. The Gali is what's the conscious. There's the energies of the Neshama, which the conscious ones. And then there's what we can call the subconscious parts of the Neshama. And to bring it out a little bit, everything that Hashgacha brought us, we have to Parshas Achrei Meis. So in the Sefer Lukut Teira, from the Alter Rebbe, in Parshas Achrei Meis, where he speaks, the parsha deals with Yom Kippur, which, by the way, this whole discussion about Amunah is also connected to these days, where we're preparing ourselves for Pesach, and we all know that Pesach matzah, the Zayah tells us, what is matzah? Mich, the food of Amunah. And Pesach is the Yontav of Amunah. Okay, so coming back to the Alter Rebbe in Parshas Achrei, where he's discussing Yom Kippur, which is the time of Tshuva, so the Alter Rebbe discusses there. The question is, a Yid who sinned and he disconnected himself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so how is he capable of reconnecting? He seemingly severed his ties, so how does he reconnect? So the Alter Rebbe discusses there, he brings, we find, says in Tehillim that David Emel says that the Eibush is Tzur Levavi, the strength, the rock of my heart, Tzur. Also, before the Eibush said the Yigimel Midas Arachamim, so Benikras HaTzur. Alter Rebbe says, what is a Tzur? The Alter Rebbe discusses fire. There's Eish. There's two types of Eish, two types of fire. There's an Eish Golui. There's a simple Eish. A fire, a flame. That fire, so you pour water on the fire, so the water extinguishes the fire. But then a tzur is a type of a stone, like a flint stone, where you can, if you bang on the stone, it creates sparks and can create a fire. The keach of esh that's in the tzur cannot be extinguished by water. You take this stone and you put it in water, it can remain immersed in water for tens of years. The keach of esh does not become extinguished. So the Alter Rebbe says that in every neshama there's an esh geluya, there's a revealed fire, but then there's a hidden fire, the tzur of the neshama. This tzur, it's a keach that nothing in the world can extinguish. It can never be extinguished. This keach of fire for Hashem can never be extinguished. This is from the sosem of the neshama. This is the hidden part of the neshama. And this is the tzur. And this is where Yid can do tshuva tam. Can do tshuva. Even if he, because the chet cannot extinguish that keach of esh. Nothing can never be extinguished. And this is deep down in the neshama. It's only that it doesn't come out so easily, just like we all know that something which is conscious is very easy. When you have to find what's in the subconscious, it's not so simple. You need psychiatrists and psychologists who are able to find out, to bring out what's in your subconscious, what's hidden there. So we need something, a special keach, to be able to draw out the subconscious of the neshama. Tshuva is not so simple. Tshuva is a tremendous energy that has the energy to draw out this tzur of the neshama. So, like I said before, that Just like the Zayah says that a Yid has a Sosim and a Sosim and Galya, and in Teira there's Sosim and Galya. The Galya of Teira draws out the Galya of the Yid. The Sosim of Teira draws out the Sosim of the Neshama. In other words, what can draw out this subconscious, these hidden energies of the Neshama? Nishmosa de Raisa, Sosim de Raisa can draw out these energies. And this is also specifically connected to Sefer HaTanya, because it's brought in Sforum that the word Tanya has the same letters as the word Eson. Eson, the Alter Rebbe, also in Likutei Teirim, Parshas Re'eh, speaks about the word Eson. Eson also is this hidden strength of the... Eson is something which is very hard and strong. The Eson of the Neshama. So learning Tanya draws out the Eson of the Neshama. The strength of the Neshama that nothing can extinguish. And here again, if we're looking for scientific evidence to this fact, so this was illustrated very clearly in the previous generation in Communist Russia. In Communist Russia, where the decrees of Yiddishkeit were overpowering, overwhelming. To live a life of a frumer Yid demanded mesivus nefesh, sacrifice, and not, nowadays the term mesivus nefesh is used very lightly. See, every time a person gives one little budge, a little bit, and it a little bit over what he can do, oh, he was mesivus nefesh. A rich person writes a check for $5 more than he usually does. Oh, he was Mason Nefesh. The term Mesidus Nefesh became very cheap. But in Communist Russia in the 1920s, we meant Mesidus Nefesh, it wasn't a joke. It meant simply putting your life on the line, literally, and or endangering being sent to Siberia. In camps in Siberia, which usually meant also death. Now, what's interesting also is that little children, small children, were educated in this way of life. You read the stories; the people who lived through it, they tell how they lived when they were small children with cheder, like they sat in a hidden in a shul, and one child would look out the window to see if the secret police are coming. And little children were brought up, were raised in this fear. But this is the way they were brought up, with this strength, with this eson. Nothing budged them. And like, it's a historical fact that who are the ones who had this unbelievable mesivus nefesh for Yiddishkeit under the communists? Everyone knows. It was those Yidden who learned Tanya, they had this Eson. They stood out. They were unique. They kept up Yiddishkeit for decades in Russia under the most difficult circumstances of Mesidus Nefesh B'Peil Mamish. So this is just to illustrate how the Tanya brings out in the Yid this Eson, this Tzur, that nothing budges. Another illustration maybe we can take from, we don't have to go back to previous generations. We can maybe go to today's generation. And if we look about that, our Rebbe took young light and he sent them to all four corners of the world. He sent it to places which like a desert of Yiddishkeit, with nothing there. And yet he had full confidence that they won't, not only will this their environment not influence them negatively, but just the opposite. They will influence their surroundings, and they will uplift their surroundings and illuminate them with the light of Yiddishkeit. And the Rebbe had confidence in them. Simply because he took people who, young men, who were brought up raised in this environment of who learned in yeshivas where they learned a few hours a day chassidus, so they had the asin of their neshama was being, this was, they were being tapped into the subconscious with nishmosa deiraisa, and so he can be confident that they can go out and not be affected, because it's like it says in Shir HaShirim, Mayim Rabin Lo Yuchal Chavas Esava. It can be Mayim Rabin, which is like a marble, overwhelming Nisyenis, which seem to be like a Mayim Rabin, like a marble. But this Ava, the fire that's in the Neshama of a Yid, it's not a simple fire. It's a fire like that's in the Keach of Eish, that's in the Tzur. So no Mayim can extinguish it. And that's why, also, it's interesting, when the Alter Rebbe wrote the Tanya, so before he printed it, he asked for Haskomis from two of his Haverim, great Tzaddikim, who were also Talmidim of the Mizritch Magid. They both lived in the same city of Annapolis. One of them was the famous Tzaddik Reb Zusha Annapolis. But there was another great Tzaddik who lived in Annapolis. His name was Reb Yehuda Leib HaTeim. And both wrote the Haskamas on Tanya. They both printed. Besides the written Haskama, there's also a Kabbalah, what they said when they gave the Haskama. So Reb Yehuda Leib HaTeim said that the Tanya, it will be the Ketedus for all the ruchnis, the magefis that will exist in the times of Ikvus of the Mashiach. So the question is, the nisyenis, the magefis ruchnis of Ikvus of the Mashiach, the nisyenis that we have in today's day and age, so obviously 200 years ago, in Sforum 200 years ago, can't address the issues that we have nowadays in a modern world 200 years later. Nevertheless, the beautiful Abel Cain said that the Tanya is going to be the Ketedush which will solve the problems. How does it solve the problems? The answer is, it doesn't address the problem. It addresses something that the problem shouldn't exist in the first place. If you have the tzur, so then nothing, it's unshakable. So then, and this is what Tanya is all about. Tanya is about drawing out your neshama in general, and specifically the sosim of your neshama. Those energies which are not conscious even, they're seemingly embedded in the subconscious of a yid, which need special energies to be able to tap into it. You can't tap into subconscious so easily. You need a special formula. And the formula is Sosam Deiraisa. Nishmosa Deiraisa, this is the formula. So this is the uniqueness of Tanya. Okay, so I think they said I should stay for an hour. So we're on the clock, it's already 10 after, so I have 10 minutes extra, but we know Chassidim don't look at clocks.